Okay, welcome everybody. Dr. Tom Hansen here with more on how to do more with less. And I'm very excited today to talk with Roxanne Emmerich, author of Thank God It's Monday, which has recently been on the bestseller list for pretty much every list that matters. And congratulations on that, Roxanne.
Thanks, Tom. It's a hoot.
It's a So you kind of who you are, there's some description here that people can read about you and what you do. I'll ask you in just a moment to give me a little bit more on your background, but I do want to establish for the listeners that to me your claim to fame is that you shop at the store my mom sells at, and so you have excellent taste in clothes.
and love your mother too.
Well, that makes two of us. So our context here on this end is how to, doing more with less. So many leaders today, pretty much every leader, is being asked to do more, like produce better results with less effort or more like less staff, less money. And nobody tells them really how to do that. They just say, hey, well, now you just got this cut and this cut, but we need this goal. And your book, Thank God It's Monday, is all about that. And we're looking at it in terms of a paradigm shift, looking at it one way. You can do little things better, but that's not really going to get you where you want to go. It needs a big paradigm shift, a shift in how you're looking at things. So could you speak to what you'd say? Well, first give us a little bit of the background for your answer, and then speak to what you would say. How does someone need to look at their business or even their own career in order to have a Thank God It's Monday culture?
Okay. Well, okay, let me tell you my background. Just like everybody else on the planet, I started my very first job right out of college, and I thought they passed around a memo that said, check your personality at the door. I went in there intending to set the world on fire, and discovered in a very short order that there were people who have issues all around me, and that it wasn't that much fun. And even though they were good people, their issues were so in the way of being able to get results in the workplace, and everybody was shooting wildly for mediocrity. And I found out that within about 3 weeks, I had lowered my sights too. And I find that when I share that with other people, that they say, I can relate. And so, later on in my career, I was starting new banks and brokerages for a bank holding company, and we set some national records in terms of growth and profitability. And I subsequently became a serial entrepreneur, starting new businesses and showing them how to do fast growth and high profit very quickly. And the leading piece to make that happen is the culture, the feel of an organization. So as you know, Tom, the leading predictor of future profits and growth in businesses is the culture. And that's what Thank God It's Monday is all about, is finding a simple and fast way to get our arms around eliminating the dysfunction, eliminating the excuses, eliminating the whining, and starting to get about some massive results in a time when people are being asked to do more with less, faster than with fewer, and doing it better than ever. We need to have better and newer solutions that actually work, as opposed to being caught up in the textbook world.
Right. Well, and it's a term that came to mind that I would like there from what you were talking about. It's a psychopathology of the average, that there's a regression to the mean, that a culture will pull up a low employee, but they'll also hold down someone who really wants to fly high, unless you really raise that bar. In sports, it's like running sprints. I know your kids played a lot of sports.
Mm-hmm.
Running sprints, if someone really hustles, the team with a poor culture will say, hey, buddy, you know, cool it, man. You're like making us look bad, because they don't want to play full out. And that same thing happens in the business world.
Yeah, exactly. I saw some statistics from a company called Client Skills that they did some research that said that 96% of employees would be thrilled if their company more aggressively managed low performers. And according to Fortune magazine, the number one reason for the downfall of unsuccessful CEOs is their failure to effectively manage low performers. So people who don't get it and who aren't coming along dramatically bring down the results of the people who came into the workplace inspired and with great skill sets, because they just kind of go, well, who cares? And so the stats right now is 70% of people disengaged. That happened before the recession. Lord knows where we're at now, because you just have to know that with this recession, the people who are left behind with twice the workload and half the friends are even more disengaged than when they last did that statistic that showed that 70% of people really are just kind of putting in their time.
Yeah. Well, so how do you do it? Let's get practical here. A company's culture is often seems to turn like the Titanic, you know? It's like, well, you see the iceberg, but it doesn't, you can't turn fast enough to really make a difference. And how do you go in? I know from your clients that you make a massive difference on a big scale fast.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Well, I've always been very curious about how the brain works, and I think that the newest information that's been out for the last couple of years is really quite mind-boggling to kind of play with words here, in that there's amazing impact that can be done by repetition in the brain to really change the behaviors, but that significant emotional events really create a whole different chemistry in the brain and neural pathways that form that immediately change things. And so one of the things that we do is we go about creating a significant emotional event, which is described in the Thank God It's Monday book as being the kick butt kickoff. And so I've been doing these kick butt kickoffs now for about 20 years. And what it is it's a wild, ruckus, playful, significant event where at the end of it, people are have tears sometimes saying, I've hated working here for 18 years. I can't wait to go to work tomorrow. And so they have, and I just received a letter from somebody the other day from one of the COOs of a large financial institution, and he had received a letter from one of his employees saying that she was suffering from depression ever since the loss of a family member and could barely come to work every day. And then after this process, now she loves coming to work again and she's happy and her depression has melted away. And so it's about getting people to make solid commitments about where we're going in a way that's compelling, that we love to be about, which most people, I mean, most leaders do have no idea how to create something compelling that people want to be a part of. It's about doing that and then making commitments about how we'll treat customers and how we'll treat each other that really raises the bar, and then showing people how to hold each other accountable to making that happen. So very significant emotional event, but also very powerful, clear language about, and I know, Tom, you're a big advocate of clear language about, hey, we said we're going to. That means we're going to. That means we're making these commitments. That means no excuses, no stories. It means we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to celebrate along the way. So this is significant emotional event literally happens in about 2.5 hours with the management team to show them how to manage differently, followed up by a 2.5 hour all employee event where everybody from the board of directors to the receptionist and everybody else on the org chart is in that room together, because that's important to really move things ahead, to get those agreements, but getting everybody to feel the energy of, look around, everybody in this room made this agreement, now we're all in.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot of hot buttons there for me in terms of emotion, for one, which, as you said at the beginning, was usually like, hey, check your emotions at the door, your personality, but we all know that's not even possible. But it is possible to mute it, but it still goes on inside people because we're humans. That's one of our the elements that makes us human. So having a big emotional event, like if you really like a girl, you take her on a date. You want to take her on a Ferris wheel, or take her to an emotional movie, because we know that's where there's shared emotion like that, you get the bond.
Mm-hmm. You get the bond, and you get the skill set, and everybody else knows you have the skill set. And so if I learn that skill set along with you, Tom, and then we see that Julie also learned that skill set, but she isn't following it, then both of us can say, hey, Julie, you know, we made some commitments here. Let's decide. I mean, I'm counting on you to live your commitments. So the power is that they're all looking at each other's eyeballs and knowing that we all made agreements, that we all know what we know here. And so, you know, we often find that when we do this, that sometimes people who don't make that session, a good chunk of them are no longer with that firm, within the next year, because they never catch on to the culture shift. They never get, I mean, they can watch the video, but it's a different experience looking into the eyes of their teammates going, I'm in. And because it literally is a goosebump effect when people really say, we are going this direction. We are going to be of massive service to the world. This is what it's going to look like. Here's how we're going to do it to make it happen. And I literally give them tasks. You know, I give them something to create. I have them create a vision statement as an entire team together. The entire team, I'm talking about the guy who pushes the broom, is a part of this. And so that they own this thing. And so at the end of that time period, they are so on fire, but they get 4 minutes to create that. So, you know, most leadership teams take, oh gosh, you know, 3 months to work that one through. And I'm a firm believer of things take as much time as you give them. Yeah. Why drag this out? This is a pretty simple process. All you're doing is you're finding out what's in the hearts. And the more you add time to those things, the more people get into their heads and really mess everything up. So the more time you give them to work on the vision, the worse it will be. Because the vision is something that basically is, if we live our most significant value in an extraordinary way, what would happen? Tell me what that looks like. And then you have it.
Yeah. So most significant value, how do you determine what that is?
That's another process we have is we teach them how to just have knowing, and how, you know, people don't think about the fact that right now as they're listening to this, that their white blood count is being regulated by something, and their adrenaline is being regulated by something, and their heartbeat is kind of working by itself without being told what to do, and nobody's checking on it, no one's telling it how to pace. So there's this unconscious thing going on that has far more intelligence than our conscious mind. And so learning to tap into that is part of the power of being able to make great decisions. And, you know, what people constantly are doing, and I see this with exec teams all the time. You know, we did some research a while back, years ago, because we keep financials on all of our clients to see how they're doing, because we, you know, a lot of our banks in the banking industry, we've taken over a lot of banks that were in trouble with FDIC, and now they're in the top 5% of performers. Well, that's fun and that's great, but here's what we know. The ones who just know that it's right and they just say, let's go, and they don't even know what everything looks like, are the ones that have the biggest breakthrough, because they know from a value system that it just kind of, it vibrates right into their heart at the right level, and they go, that feels right to me. That those are the ones that have the biggest breakthroughs. The ones who have to go, you know, do their due diligence on their due diligence, never do as well, because that's how they make decisions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't know how to make decisions based on values. They want decisions based on data and I'm an economics, you know, I've been trained in economics. That was my upbringing. And so I know how to work my left brain. What I'm saying, though, is it's not like you ignore data. It's just that values always trump data. If you know that at the core of your being, this is a fit, then just get going.
Yeah. Got it. So then the key becomes getting to that state, especially with a bunch of bankers, very left brain people. You got them in a room. How do you get them to tap into that knowing? One is you're giving them very little time to do something, so there's a little bit of panic, which is good, I'm sure, because it just speeds them up and short circuits their process. Anything else in terms of how do you get in touch with your knowing?
Well, I make fun of how people make decisions so they can get to see how ridiculous it is, which really creates for them the understanding of what really matters in making a decision. And so what I say to them is, you know, you've all made that one commitment in your life where the second you made it, your body just kind of in your solar plexus, you had that little flippy feeling. So it's like you offered someone a job, and the second the words were out of your mouth, you had that feeling like, oh, something's really, really wrong here, but all the data looks right. For some people, it was saying, I do. the second that commitment is made, it's like, oh, man. And I ask people, you know, how'd that turn out for you? And whenever you get that feeling, you know it's a no. And so what I'm teaching them to understand is, you know, the kahunas, and the great kahunas in Hawaii, talk about what they call the na'au, which is that feeling in your solar plexus that you just experience. You can feel it in your body, and you can feel it's a heck yes or a heck no. And
now,
so,
what did you say?
Pardon me?
What was the word? Now?
the na'au, na'au, it's a Hawaiian word, that basically is that sense of knowing that you have, that you can feel in your body. It's kind of like, it's like it's what our dogs and our cats have, but we have too. It's just in the Western world we get confused and we forget that we have that, but we all know we have it because we've all had that experience of it.
Yeah.
And when you're making a decision about values, that is not a left brain cerebral decision. That is a feeling. And the more you let your left brain in, the more you will screw up that decision in such a way that you can never bring it back again. And you know, you see that oftentimes, excuse me, just 1 second, you may have to edit this part out here because I need to clear my throat.
<That's>
I need to take a drink of water here. Okay. Sorry about that. So you see this with exec teams all the time when they do their strategic planning. They take, you know, they work on a vision statement, and it takes them forever. And by the time they have it complete, it's so watered down and it's so powerless that there's no motivation, there's no juice, there's no fun. And what they aren't understanding is that from the get-go, they were guaranteed that result because
right.
their very process that they're using is wrong. They're getting into cerebral thing. They're trying to have everybody's feelings involved and be all things to all people. And it's just an ugly process that takes away the heart. You know, what I say to people is when you nail it, when you nail your vision statement, when you say, okay, what value do we most stand for? And if we live that value in an extraordinary way, what would happen? And you answer that, you know you have it because you will have goosebumps on your kneecaps. I mean, and you know, and I do this experience with people, and you know, within a few minutes they are jumping out of their chairs, screaming, "Ooh, we have to go! Ooh, our table has to share! Ooh, we've got it!" And then you know what we do is I have different tables share, and then we do a vote at the end. But people go nuts over this. When they hear the right one, they don't even care what their table came up with. They're like, "Oh my gosh, that's it! That's it! That's what's in my heart." And what I'm telling to leaders is let go of having to be the people who create the vision. The vision is what is in your people's hearts. What do they want to make happen in such a way that it's so compelling that they don't have a choice but to move ahead with it.
Nice. Love it. So the paradigm shift, going back to the very beginning, is from left brain to right brain and head to heart.
Head to heart, that's the journey. That's
yeah.
the big one. We do it once a year, and I wish I could do a lot more of these, but once a year I do a program just for CEOs called Permission to Be Extraordinary. And we have another one just for execs that is always usually in the following week. And it's a very intense program, but it's really about the journey from head to heart. And when CEOs walk out of that, they say things to me like, "This saved my marriage. This saved my organization." I've had people who said, every time I had one male bank CEO who was terrified to give speeches, and he told the whole group he would cry before he gave each speech. He would be so terrified he would cry. And after he went through this, he talked about how he was volunteering to do every speech. He couldn't wait to do them. He felt he was the world's best speaker. It was rewiring of the brain because of the journey from head to heart. And once he got that journey and he started down the path, there was no going back. There was no more fear about speaking in front of a group. He just had this thing down, and he couldn't wait to get on to his next one. And so, you know, and here's what we do with our CEOs. We try to keep them so cerebrally trapped in, okay, how are you managing your inventory? Well, that's great, but somebody else can do that. Just know what they do and check on it once in a while. But that's not your job. Your job as an executive is to inspire people to greatness and pull out of them so much more than they thought was possible. And how fun is that when you get to have that as the experience that you leave every day from, as opposed to I sat behind my desk and my T's were crossed and my I's were dotted. And so, you know, getting people massively committed to results is really the name of the game.
Yeah, gotcha. Just shifting gears slightly, because it's like, I'm thinking of like, well, how do you pull this off? But I know that because you are congruent. You yourself are like authentic, congruent, vibrating at a high frequency, however you'd want to phrase it. If I'm listening to this as an individual, what do I do? Maybe I can't host an emotional event right now. I don't feel like I'm ready to to quite do that. What do I do as an individual to take this on?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes there's a couple routes they can go. One is to play in the sandbox that's in front of them. And so, you know, most people go, oh, you know, my workplace is a train wreck. I need
right.
to get out of here. Well, they're going to, you know, you've heard the expression, out of the frying pan into the fire.
Sure.
That's real. And so if you think that you're leaving the dweebs at your office for perfect human beings someplace else, let me assure you that at your new place you'll have excuse crafters and gossipers and whiners and people who massively sabotage things and play passive-aggressive games. That's going to happen someplace else too. And so what you have to do is learn to work within that system and help people heal and get sane. And that means you got to confront it as it happens. When you see it, boom, call it. You know, let people see, but not in a nasty way, like, oh, there you are, you jerk, there, I just caught you, see? It's not about that. It's about going, hey, wait a minute, when you did this, it creates this mess. My request from you is that from now on you do this instead. Do I have your commitment? And you got to make sure that they give you firm words that, yes, I'm committed. And then if they don't live that commitment, you got to go deeper into that little process to go, hey, now we got another problem. Now, you know, you said you're going to be to work every day by 8 o'clock, but you're, and then you weren't, and then we confronted this, and now you said you would, but now you aren't again. So our bigger problem we have now is the problem of trust, because you gave me your word and you violated the word. And so now you have to tell me how you're going to clean up that mess so that I can now trust you again in the future, because if we don't have a groundwork of trust, we have no groundwork for a relationship.
Yeah.
You can have that conversation with your boss, and should. I mean, in a sane work environment, you should be able to have that with your boss. Now, you have to come with a loving spirit. If you come in with your hands on your hips and you're ready to rip, you know, that's not going to work well. And so it's how you do it. I've always believed you can tell anybody anything as long as you come with love in your heart. That's the kindness that's necessary with this, but also the firmness. And so, you know, people don't get that kind and firm have to come in the same equation. And so, you know, I live in the Midwest, and I think you're originally from here, Tom.
I'm from Moorhead.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you understand passive-aggressive behavior. I'm amazed at the extent of which passive-aggressive behavior happens in the Midwest compared to other parts of the country, which
yeah.
means everybody's smiling and acting nice, but then they rip you behind your back, or they say they'll do something, but they don't really mean it, but they're not direct about it because, or, you know, you walk in with dog hair on your pants, but nobody says, oh, by the way, you got dog hair on your pants. They let that go all day long. Well, that's not kind.
They'll make fun of you after you leave.
Yeah, exactly, okay? and then they're thinking they're being nice, you know, because I didn't say something. It's like, no, you say something. That's what being nice is. And so we have a really skewed understanding of what's appropriate. And so, you know, I think part of the magic of our work, and, you know, and we've had organizations. We had one that hadn't grown more than 2% a year that grew 35%. In the following 30 days, which is more than they had the previous decade combined, just using this process. And then we've had similar experiences with that over and over again. And so miraculous results happen when you show people how to communicate directly and powerfully and being tolerant of the crazy-making behaviors. You know, what you don't want is a whole bunch of people going, well, if you act crazy, I'll let you off the hook because then you'll let me off the hook for being crazy.
Right.
If I don't meet my responsibilities, then you'll let me off the hook for, if I let you off the hook, then you'll let me off the hook for me not meeting that requirement. And so then you have craziness throughout. And I don't know what it is that maybe mamas don't teach this stuff. They didn't get your mom, clearly, you know. but I think we're forgetting to teach in our schools what kindness looks like, what responsibility looks like, and what good, sane communication skills look like. And so, you know, I could have gotten by with a few less history courses, I think, and a little bit more, how do we really function as human beings to get results and have great relationships? And
yeah.
and that's an area that's massively missed in our school system, and people coming into the workplace are way underskilled in those areas. And so it is my intention to have a huge impact, create a movement of people who are really out there doing this work, saying enough of that. The workplace does not have to be an adult daycare. In fact, I'm a stand for that. My workplace heals. So to answer your question and getting back on that, Tom, that's one thing is just to do the skills themselves. The other that I recommend is that they drip, drip, drip. And what I mean by drip, drip, drip is, and I've had several clients who have done this where, you know, somebody started off and they were the chief technology officer or they were the head receptionist or whatever, and they just kept going into the CEO every day saying, I think we need to do this. I think we need to do this. I think we need to do this, until they got the CEO to go, oh, okay then. And then those organizations had huge turnarounds. And it's interesting, one of the women who did something like this was working in a bookkeeping department. She became the CEO of the company as a result, because she completely transformed the culture. So you never know what's possible for you when you take on the biggest predicted result in the workplace, which is culture, and say, I can do this, I can follow a template, I will be a stand, I'll make this happen.
Yeah, so I still think that someone would listen and say, okay, well, that's easy for you, Miss Dynamo, to say. But I don't have that personality that you're speaking with right now. How do you get the cojones to bring in another Hawaiian term to come forward? I know you said, well, it's coming back. I'm trying to pull it together to make it as easy for me as possible. So I can use it. But to me, it's still back to coming from your heart, because that's how the cojones come from. That it's a loving act, not a in your face football tackle act.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, the passion doesn't have to be a flamboyant passion. I, you know, obviously there's a fire in my belly that kind of comes through physically and in my voice.
Right.
But you can be we have clients that are powerhouses that have very subdued personalities, because it's not about being a dynamo. It's just about setting that intention and powerfully moving ahead in that direction. Although I do coach people that I've never met a two-year-old who somebody would say was shy and had to be coached to kind of like send out their personality. I mean, that may happen, but very, very rarely. So there's something that happens to us in our conditioning as human beings that chips away a part of our soul. And so when I watch people, because I work a lot, I've worked a lot with engineers, I've worked with a lot of bankers, a lot of these folks who go into those very left brain fields go there to because they're emotionally constipated. I mean, they've just gotten to this place where they tend to have kind of shut out the world and stopped feeling.
Right.
And one of the things that I share with them is, listen, somebody did this to you, you know, but nobody gets to take your energy. And I remember who did it to me. You know, I had the nun from hell in the fourth grade, who just ripped me up one side and down the other, to the point that I became extremely shy and extremely introverted and remained that way all through high school. And I would wager a bet that pretty much every human being who, if they had a perfectly functional home, which of course there are very few of those, but if they were lucky enough to have that, then they probably had the bully at school, or the nasty teacher, or the bus driver, or somebody got to them and chipped away a part of their soul. And what I try to get across to people is, nobody gets to have your soul. You get to take that back at any moment, and you get to be outrageous and playful and fun and take on that two-year-old that you used to be, and bring all those elements back that made you so wonderful, and stop living life in such a tiny, tiny, tiny little box that when you get to the end of it, you go, gosh, I didn't really live, though. You know, I firmly believe that people who are afraid to die, it's more a reflection that they really haven't lived yet.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for the human race, there's way too many of us.
All right, so we're almost out of time. What I wanted to close with is, what are some physical practices? This program is not about having physical practices that a leader or a person who aspires to be a leader can actually do. And in particular, I would want it to be, how does one make that move from head to heart? What's a practice or practices that they can do to chop off the gunk that's covered up their soul?
Okay. Whew. Another 15 hours I could get that part done here.
Okay.
But, but, you know, I think the big answer to that is decide to.
Uh-huh.
It always stems from a decision, because once you decide, things rally up pretty fast behind that decision to get you to that place.
Right.
So it's about making a decision to push through that. It's about, you know, deciding to have your joy back, and it's about deciding to be a stand. You know, and I'm hoping that for anybody who knows anybody who stopped caring at work and stopped enjoying their job, that you know, they pick up a Thank God It's Monday book for that friend, that they get one for themselves, and that if they have a colleague in their workplace that they want to take this on with, buy one for their colleague too, and then take a stand together, because sometimes it's harder as one person, but when you have two or three people who say, no, we're going to make this happen, and
yeah,
we're a stand for it, we're absolutely going to make that happen, then things begin to shift. So you don't have to do it alone. Get the information out of the people's hands so you can move it ahead.
Right. Terrific, yeah, and that's a perfect practice right there. Get a Thank God It's Monday book and read it. I got fired up reading it over the weekend, and was fired up to have this conversation. It was even better than I thought it would be. So I really encourage people to get the book and to check out emrickgroup.com.
And thankgodit'smoney.com, too. That would be a great place for them to start.
Okay.
As well. There's on that website, there are free audios they can get every Monday morning that teaches a lesson about how to be. And please listen to that with your work team. It'll make all the difference, and it's free. There's nothing you can get in trouble with here. But it really moves things ahead. Our clients just go nuts over those because they say it really shifts the culture. And so that's one thing they can do. They'll create a result very, very quickly, is just spend 1 minute every week sitting around with your work team, listen to it together, and make commitments about how you're going to make a shift in that area.
Right. Fantastic. So that's a great aid, and it keeps people from having the onus all on themselves. They can just, hey, listen to this, and then run with it. So, thank you very much. This was great. I'm fired up, ready to culture and everyone else's.
I applaud you, and congratulations for the good work that you're doing in the world. I've really enjoyed your book as well.
Great.
Mutual Admiration Society, and now that we're sharing the same mom, all is good.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much. I will look forward to speaking with you soon. And people listening in, there's links around where you're listening to this to get shortcuts. But we gave you the link. Thank God It's Monday.com and emrickgroup.com. Thank you very much, Roxanne.
Thank you, and enjoy making it all happen.
All right. Bye-bye.